This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Maybe I'm just in a much better mood because we've got the Shams Charania report from the Pat McAfee show today where he said he expects Darius Garland to play tonight.
Yeah, that'll bring up anybody's vibes. Now, we don't know the status of the other guys. It seemed like yesterday was trending that all three were playing. You can tell by my friends in the desert and how this line is moving now up to 3.5. I would venture it goes higher and higher in the Cavs' favor. They believe everyone is playing, so it's a lot of good. It's a lot of good signs for the wine and gold.
A little over your friends in the desert.
What?
Little over them.
Andrew Barron this morning,
Johnny,
says he books with my friends in the desert.
Dr. Boombots, I'm not trying to upset anyone out there. Not trying to end up like any of Joe Pesci's characters in Martin Scorsese films.
Well, the casino one was clearly the worst way to die out of all the ways that Pesci died.
Because he wasn't dead when he went in the hole. That's why it was
I mean, obviously, like you can be blindsided when you think that you're going to be a made man, and that's fine. You're just dead then. Lights out. Exactly right. But when you get buried alive, probably not great.
Yeah, that's so I don't want that. Just so we're clear, that's not what I want. But our friends in the desert have made the Cavs an overwhelming favorite the first two games. The second one bugged me more than anything. The first one was rightful. The second one, you were without three of your best players. That was in doubt. It was very unlikely. And they were still, what, a 6-point favorite by the time the game went to
It was
to
a five. Off? It got down to a 5-point favorite, which is actually where the line sits currently right now. The Cavs are 5-point favorites.
Oh.
It has climbed up. Yesterday when we talked to Darryl, or sorry, 2 days ago when we talked to Darryl on Wednesday, the line was 1.5. And now, as you've seen better and better reports coming out about what the Cavs are going to be able to offer up, we are now 5-point favorites tonight. My friends in the desert believe a smackdown is happening this evening.
I want that. I need that. I want that. I need that. I need a smackdown.
Do you want that?
I
need that.
I want it. Need it. Gotta have it. Right? Like the Cold Stone.
I was gonna say.
Love it. Like it. I don't know. Really love it.
Gotta have it.
Wasn't one of them like really love it? I don't know. The point is, all of those, all the Cold Stone sizes of things tonight. I need them to show it, though, right? We're back to proof of concept. The Cavs have to prove that they can beat the Pacers tonight. I think they can. I believe they will. But I'll believe a smackdown. Cavs by 25. But I believe a smackdown when I will see the smackdown.
It just gives you so much hope, though. You know, I mean, because for the first couple games, we wondered who was actually making the calls on this. We didn't know if Darius was going to be able to, even if he wanted to, be able to put himself in the game. Like, there's been a lot around this. And the fact that they're going to be out there, at least it seems like at least Darius is going to be out there. How do you not feel great?
Because there's a part of me that wonders if the Cavs are still playing the game. Right? If the Cavs...
You think this is gamemanship now, too?
I worry about it. Yeah, how could you not?
Well, it is just a report from Shams. It's not as if Atkinson himself came down and said that it was good to go.
It's not as if Wode said it.
Well, I mean, we can... I was going to make a Schefter bomb joke, but we can't have 3 straight days of Nagasaki jokes.
I didn't know if we were going to go... They were going to have to revert to like Bill Hurley? Bob Hurley? What's the other Hurley?
Dan Hurley.
That crazy bastard. I didn't know if we were going to get into that as well.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I don't need...
Am I allowed to have that fear, though? Because this will piss me off.
You're right, though, in that we wouldn't have that fear if it was Woj.
If
Woj had said it, we'd be like, I guess he's playing. But Shams, who's the best NBA insider in the game, he says it, and we're not as confident.
Well, I think it's because there's not a war going on, right? Like when Woj or Shams had it, there was something about that war of getting it right that I trusted that their competition made it more right. Now, there's not the pressure to get it as right. There's not the pressure to not be played by an agent because who's going to scoop you? Yeah. I almost said somebody's name and it was going to be wildly offensive to that person unintentionally.
I mean, but this isn't LeBron going to play in Miami. You know what I mean? Like this is a big.
This is huge.
It's big, but it isn't that level big. It isn't. I mean, like Shams doesn't have to put this out there. It's not going to make or break his day.
I'll tell you what it will. If Shams is wrong about this and Darius doesn't play, I will never fully trust a Shams report again.
Well, yeah, if he's wrong about it, that's why. But I mean, how many times has Shams been wrong? It's been like I can count on one hand. I think I can count on one hand the amount of times he's been wrong.
I can count 12. I can't give you specific instances.
The gamemanship attached to this means that the Cavs would be way inside their head trying to play everybody if that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs. So the Cavs organization, maybe this is just game three energy. I'm ramped up, a little nervous, good
vibes. I think you're still a little scared about what Chris had to say with us yesterday.
Yeah, no, Chris put this giant kernel of doubt of like, yeah, I don't expect any of those three guys to play. So then...
That should alarm you only because Chris is around these guys every single day. Shams, I don't know the last time he's seen Garland, Hunter, or Mobley, and I can promise you this, he hasn't seen them since they've been injured.
And there's another part of me, so even if it's not gamesmanship, there's the other part that begs the question, how healthy really is Darius?
Like, that's something we need to be focused in on, right?
Is this decoy Darius, or are we going to get a guy that can drop 25 points tonight and help create?
So I, at this point, would bet a lot of money he does play. But I would take Chris's words as truth and gospel in the idea that he's not going to look right. Now, I do think DeAndre Hunter will look back to normal because apparently his swelling has gone down and it seems like everything's all right there. But between Garland and Mobley and some of the stuff Chris had to say about Mobley not being able to walk on Tuesday, I mean, how do you not think that's alarming?
So the big concern specific to Darius is how effective can he really be, right? So, like, our question that we're going to throw out to you guys to start the show, 216-474-0092, is how does Darius playing tonight, if this Shams bomb is correct, how does Darius playing tonight impact your expectations? And the reality is, if you could tell me he's 100%, Cavs by 25. If you could tell me he's 80%, I'm still going to give the Cavs the chance to win. It's just not knowing makes when all of a sudden Vegas has already started to be doubtful in my mind, like Shams will be if he gets this report wrong. All of a sudden, I'm a 5-point favorite when you're down 0-2 on the road.
Did you see the Boston series? Do you see the Boston series for Saturday night?
No.
They're 3.5-point favorites.
See, I don't love this. What are we basing that off of?
I think they're basing it off of... I think they're giving the Celtics and the Cavs a lot of regular season respect.
So...
And us watching them and seeing them do it for 5 months and not just taking two games and wiping that away.
Is it the back against the wall argument, potentially?
I just think in both instances, and I think the Celtics apply to this the same way the Cavs apply to it, both teams have shot horrendous from the outside in the two games. Both teams have reasonable... Like you can go down different roads for how they got there for both losses. That shouldn't happen again. And I think there's belief in watching those two teams be the best teams in the East that makes you think, okay, they're going to get right back up on that horse and they'll be all right.
So how does Darius then playing tonight, if this report is true, how does that impact your expectations?
I mean, it's huge. I think Darius at 70%, 80%, I don't care what percentage it is going to be better than Ty Jerome shooting 1-for-14. Is he not?
The Jerome slander bugs me.
I'm sorry,
at least
but we have to account for it.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, but he is playing.
Like, not even a net negative. Like, what about the worst output you could have from someone that Darius is stepping in? And again, if that's 70%, if you had 70% of Darius, if you had 40% of Darius in game 2, you win that game.
There is a part of me that thinks the Darius benefit. I made the point of 25 points. Can he shoot, 40% from 3? Those things are icing on the cake in this game. To me, it's... Can he facilitate for everybody else? Because that, I actually think the impact is double. You get everybody else some shots, and it just takes pressure off Ty.
For sure. And even on top of that, too, I don't expect Darius to be driving to the hole the way that we typically see him do. I do expect him to be a slower version of Darius. But if the guy that you're replacing and the role that you're trying to replace, and the reason why the Cavs lost by a point, Nick, it's not like they lost by a million. You lost by a point. is replacing Ty Jerome and that low output that he gave in game two, then we're sitting in the driver's seat, I would imagine.
216-474-0092. How does Darius playing tonight impact your expectations? There's a few. We'll tell you kind of what we have set up for today's show. I would like to point out how there's something going on social media right now that is just really annoying me as we're starting the show, because I am amped up for game three. I'm excited for game three.
Trying to be Switzerland on Shedeur Sanders, but is the hype train going?
No.
Okay.
It's how people say, hey, just so you know, training camp videos don't matter. And every person who says that is now putting out training camp videos while you and I are talking.
You were in the training camp videos don't matter club.
Yeah, I know, but you don't see
Berea posting photos right now.
But like,
if we were there, like, you would be.
God bless Kenny. Ken's got a picture of Dylan Gabriel. Got a picture of the quarterback saying Dylan Gabriel really throw gas, or really does throw gas. Say, like, what are we doing here?
Right? He throws gas.
We can't diminish the conversation of none of this matters. And then, oh, hey, by the way, can I get my 15 likes on a video about, I wish there was a different quarterback, because I'm either going to say Dylan and it's going
to
sound like Ken, I'm
bashing standing
Kenny
next to Dylan Gabriel would do more likes.
I do. No, I want to know that. Yeah.
Isn't Ken like 6'5"?
Ken and I think are the same height.
You're 6'4".
Yeah, I think we're the same height.
So you're both 6'4"? I'd get the same output if you stood next to him?
Yes.
And if Ken stood next to him? Well, I need that photo.
It's all I really want to know.
I need the Altuve Aaron Judge photo, but it'd be a sports radio host and our starting quarterback in the city.
I stood next to Danny Shelton, and Danny claimed to be 6'2". No way in hell. But Danny was like 6'1", and he weighed like 340 pounds. And it would look like DeJuan Jones standing next to Wyatt Teller in camp 2 years ago. That's how I look next to Danny.
Have any of the players...
Me or Ken next to Dylan Gabriel, it'll look like there's a Smurf standing next to you.
Have any of the players ever been like, where'd you play ball?
I got that on the street today, and I had to tell him, no, I was a loser.
You got it on the street today?
Yeah, there's an older guy. He's an older guy. I think he needed... He just basically needed some help walking across the street, because I think he was afraid to walk across the street, so I walked with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, where'd you play football? And I was like, in my mind.
And then walked off?
No, because he's like, no, but
you
seriously.
Had a nice convo. Yeah, you had a nice convo.
But he's like, no, but seriously. I was like, I wanted to play Bowling Green, but I didn't play Bowling Green. I didn't even play in high school. 216-474-0092. I'm going to shock you, old man. I'm helping walk across the street. Didn't get a lot of love, okay? Turns out hypersensitive ADHD children and football coaching didn't jive well together.
That was Antonio Brown's excuse.
Yeah, well. Also, my excuse with women. Chris Jimenez, Guardians. Not now. I got a wife. She's awesome. Chris Jimenez, Guardians TV analyst, coming up at 2:40. Kevin Stefanski's press conference, allegedly, at 3. We've got Kirk Heelan, NBC Sports, coming up at 3:20. At 4:20. Plenty to get to with the Cavs, with mini camps. Again, none of those videos matter, but make sure to retweet and like everyone and make your own inferences on them. But how does Darius Garland playing tonight impact your expectations and confidence in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan? I'm the most obvious guy. If somebody on me shows up on Law & Order, I'm almost too obvious. They're like, oh, the fat guy with the beard and the bad presentation. Like, clearly the lumberjack killed somebody. Too fat to be a lumberjack. The guy that's too fat to be a lumberjack. Like, basically, I'd just be stealing Vance Taylor Pruitt's whole career if I did that.
What I'd love is if you went on the one with Ice-T, just so we could have the surprise shocked face. And just do the whole John Mulaney bit. It's like, you mean to tell me that he was? And then he goes through the whole entire bit of what it was.
I mean, honestly.
And I can't say it on the air. That's why I stopped myself.
Mulaney's like, yeah, bit on Ice-T.
You work in the special crimes victim unit, Ice-T.
Like,
what did you think was going to happen?
Comedy bits that have happened in the last 5 years. It really
I got
is.
News for you.
It is right up there. Now
he's so shocked about every single one. It's like,
now,
you work in the special victims unit. What'd you think?
Specific to the Darius thing, I do think it's interesting the phrasing of, hey, he's going to give it a go. Man, I got a lot of confidence on this one, huh?
I just love the doubt that you're casting on it just because
not
you just
on the
doubt.
Cavs.
No. It's pure Shams doubt. It's reporting doubt.
Yeah.
And that's the part I think I find the funniest.
Well, I think it's actually more Cavs honesty doubt. They're all three organizations in this town really, really, really believe in the idea of just not telling anyone anything. And sometimes they claim it's out of privacy for the player, which is hogwash. And other times they just don't want it. And all it is control of information. It's not, it's guys, this isn't gamesmanship. Hey, Coach Carlisle, Darius is now out today. Oh, my job just got easier. Yeah, you just plan for the hardest possible thing. And then when that turns to not happen, then you go, oh, I guess we can do like 70% of what we needed to do because we won't need to do as much because Darius isn't playing. Well, it's all about power. It's not actually about anything other than giving the media, as it were, a hard time.
They also have an easy out within this, too, because they can always just have Darius go out for practice and then be like, go for warm-ups. Be like, oh, it was a game-time decision. And then he didn't feel good.
Yep. Tweaked it. Alloy in his toe with the shoe or something.
Yeah, and no one comes back and then says Shams was wrong. It's like, well, no, it was new information. He was going to play. He wanted to play. And then, you know, warm-ups didn't go the way that he wanted it.
So if you told me none of the three were playing tonight, I'd be wildly confident in the Cavs winning tonight. If you said, wildly is a very loaded word, I'd be confident the Cavs are going to win.
Okay.
If you told me all three were going to play and be able to seriously contribute, or two of the three, or one of the three, I'd be wildly confident the Cavs were actually going to be able to win tonight, and that they were going to win. It is the ambiguity where my lack of confidence, because I think it's really hard to win in the playoffs. I think you saw this at the end of game four, where Kenny was trying to sub in and out Donovan to get him 2 minutes, 3 seconds, whatever, of relaxation.
And then was getting murdered, by the way, when he wasn't on the court.
And by the way, now I got to make sure that, Isaac off, Ty on. Oh, we've got this thing happening. Like at some point it's just harder for Kenny to be the best version of himself while facing off against a Jedi Master and Rick Carlisle if all three are going to try and give it a go. Because that means all three could go out there for the first 5 minutes of the game and be like, I got to go, and then you have to hard pivot.
Well, so this is where I feel like real coaching comes into play. Like, this is where you earn your keep if you're Kenny Atkinson.
As opposed to nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To fake coaching.
Yeah, well, sometimes, fake coaching is, and listen, I'm going to run with your term here for a second, but if we're playing down the fake coaching rabbit hole, it's like, all right, I know who my eight guys are, and I know when to play them. I got a plan going into it, and all it is just executing the plan as we figured out through the 3 days that we had three off days in order to figure out exactly what we needed to do. This is on the fly. This is like real in-game. I always get baseball managers, even though the game is much slower, I always give them a lot of credit because I think it's so hard to, in the moment, always line up the matchups and then be able to pull the right levers at the right time. With coaching, especially in the NBA, a lot of times you can have this stuff figured out before the game even gets underway. But with this, he's going to have to do a lot of measuring. How does Garland feel right now? How does Mobley feel right now? Are they actually looking like they can play this game? Or are they looking like they can just eat up a couple minutes here and there? Do they need to be out of the game completely? Like, there's a lot of on-the-fly coaching that's going to have to happen tonight.
But even within that, your answer in the first quarter might not be the same as your answer in the fourth quarter.
Well, and that's what you got to monitor, right? Like, again, Donovan looked great for three quarters, didn't look great in the fourth quarter. Well, he's still out there because you need him out there. But if Darius looks that way, you've got to be able to say, okay, great, we got three quarters out of you, but you look gassed, you look spent, we don't want you out here now.
So I am actually confident. It doesn't sound that way, but I'm buttressing my confidence with what I think is the reality of the situation, which is there's just a lot of ambiguity here. And I'll even go, like, there's a part of me that wonders, like, if this is Darius's decision to play, is Darius deciding to play because he's ready or because he hears a lot of the things that are said about him? And not just him. I mean, DeAndre and Evan have gotten a ton of crap on social media and through just the generic media for not playing. There was the Stephen A. Smith thing calling Darius out, which is wild. Like, I got to tell you, that is wildly disrespectful for a guy who apparently claims LeBron's not a good father because of the Bronny situation. I don't know how anyone gets to a point in their career where they're comfortable telling someone who's injured that they should play. There's a part of me that is concerned that might be part of the reason they're playing tonight, though.
Well, we know Darius obviously cares what the national media has to say. That's why anytime he does a tour, he's the one to speak on behalf of the team. I do wonder about that, though. Atkinson said that Garland sitting on game two was a medical decision. Was tonight a medical decision then? Did the doctors clear him for this? Or was this Darius bypassing the doctors, which would then make you wonder why he didn't bypass the doctors and Kenny Atkinson in game two?
Teams always say it's a medical decision, and they act as if it's cut and dry, white and
black. You get to take it out of your hands is the point there. Like, if Atkinson says it's a medical decision, then he has no blame. He takes no blame in the process.
It is my understanding, and this is not specific to any one organization, it is my understanding that it's not cut and dry the way they always put it. And I'm not just saying the Cavs. I mean, in sports, it's a medical decision is just the cop-out answer of, we don't want to say the words, the player doesn't feel like he can play, or there's a myriad of things, or the coach made the decision and the coach and the players don't see eye to eye, because sometimes that happens. There are coaches out there with the balls to actually do that, although we never seem to encounter them. We seem to encounter the guys that cower in fear of players and upsetting players.
It's Stefanski letting Baker play through his injury when he was clearly injured.
I was subtweeting the hell out of Stefanski there, and you nailed it right on the – I mean, just right there. Can't even say it. It annoys me when coaches point to you, sir. But, I don't believe what Kenny said, that it was a medical decision or just strictly a medical decision.
I think if Garland plays tonight, that's proof that obviously he was lying.
If Garland plays and plays poorly or he plays 5 minutes, he gives it a go. It's proof that he didn't know. It's proof that he knew he wasn't ready and that he felt pressured into coming back. Whether that's by the fans or just by pressure of being in a team environment, I'm telling you, if he plays 5 minutes and can't go much more than that, the writing's right there.
I mean, it's on the bingo card that's how this goes down. And then he will get, I mean, as far as fans are concerned, he will get the credit that he wants in regards to trying to play hurt. Because no one will be able to say anything. You won't. You'll be like, okay, I watched him play. Well,
in the social media era,
always say everything, but you'll say, me and you and reasonable minds will say, he gave it the best 5 minutes he possibly could. He's clearly injured. He shouldn't be out there. Same thing if Donovan, late in that game against Indiana in game two, the moment that Mathurin basically climbed up over him like he was scaling a skyscraper and then landed on him, if Donovan was just like, I'm not getting up and I'm out, we all would have been like, okay, we get it.
Not a T, by the way. 216-474-0092. Any concern that Darius is going to give it a go tonight for the reasons other than just trying to help his team win? Because I worry for the kid. He's a young man. I worry for the player in that instance of your heart overriding maybe common sense. That's something that I'll be thinking of watching him early in this game. We do have Chris Jimenez, Guardians TV analyst, talking the Guards. Quick start coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Your Cleveland Guardians off to a very nice start. I believe they're 14-8 in their last 22 games. They've won 5 of their last 6 series, or 4 of the last 5. Stats aren't really my thing. However, they're winning quite a many series. And to talk about the Gardos as they get ready to host the Phillies for the 3-game set, and then the Brewers after that for another 3-game set here in Cleveland. As you guys might have known, we do pick up somebody from the Guardians TV broadcast every week here on the show. And this week we've got the great Chris Jimenez on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me on. I guess you're not the only one excited about the Browns, huh?
Oh, so wait, are you a Shador fan as well? Because my partner and you will become best friends if that happens.
I mean, at this point in the 5th round, I feel like, how could you not be a Shador fan? You know, what he has the ability mm-hmm. to, I think, provide at a 5th round value. I mean, it stinks that it had to happen this way, but think about what could potentially be if he ends up, you know, turning into somebody who we feel like could be a franchise quarterback. You got potentially the best steal of all time. And if it wasn't, okay, it's a 5th rounder, it's no big deal. Like, how many 5th rounders actually do pan out to be those types of players?
Speak to him, Chris. Now I forgot we even had you on for Guardians talk.
I know, right?
I wanted to do a follow-up. I'm like, so what about Shador do you love the most? And I agree with you, just keep talking. No, let's talk Guardians a little bit here. Gavin Williams on the bump tonight. I get excited over Gavin. I think we all do. What have you seen in the early parts of the season? What can he do a little bit better to maybe get that ERA down?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what he provides is a potential ace, truthfully. I mean, if you were to create a player, you know, it'd pretty much be the physique and type of stuff and velocity that Gavin Williams has. And I know his velocity has ticked up a little bit over a mile an hour from last year. It's very evident that he's healthy this year, but I think the lack of repetitions he got last year is starting to come into play a little bit, what you're seeing with this year. He just doesn't quite have the feel for the strike zone like we've seen him in the past, in particular his rookie year, right? He came up like gangbusters, was fantastic, rookie of the year voting potential, and you started to think like, okay, we may have an absolute beast on our hands here, and I think we still do. I am not ready to give up on Gavin Williams. I don't think anybody is, to be honest with you, but I'll tell you what, he needs to trust his stuff in the strike zone. I mean, that's key number one. You get the fastball down in the strike zone, he's going to utilize the top part, that's fine. But to me, everything kind of stems off that fastball, establishing strike one early, and then using your breaking stuff off of it. That's when he's been very successful in the past. And I think it's just getting him to feel confident and comfortable with that in his strike zone. Then it starts to go from there.
Chris, I got to tell you, the Class A thing's wildly interesting, not just to me, but to everybody, just because there's so many layers to it about, you know, is it stuff related? Is it mental? So you were a catcher. From the catcher side of things, is there something that Bo or Austin can do to help, or is this between Emmanuel and himself and the coaching staff?
Believe it or not, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I've seen, you know, things like this happen before, maybe not to somebody of Class A's ilk per se, but if you ask me, I noticed this in the playoffs last year. I said it, you know, not necessarily publicly, but to anybody that would listen at home, that he kind of changed the way he was attacking hitters. And it's funny because Fangraphs actually just came out with a big article yesterday kind of talking about this exact thing, that I don't know if the playoffs got to him, if it was, you know, some of the numbers that somebody got to him that said, you know, please try and throw the ball into a lot of these right-handed hitters that he was facing during the playoffs. But that's what he did all of last year. He made guys really uncomfortable on that inside part of the plate to righties, away to lefties. And when you can control 99 to 103 when he's foaming at the mouth, and that ball's got as much horizontal run as it does, it's impossible to hit, number one. Number two, talk about making you as uncomfortable as you could possibly be. That puts something in the back of your head as a hitter that's like, I can't dig in here. I don't know where this thing's going, even though he's got pretty darn good control of it, or he did last year. But then once the playoffs started, you started to see him use that glove side part of the plate down and away. That's not necessarily a pitch that he can control, in my opinion, to maybe what he was hoping to, right? Like, everything that he throws works off of that same arm slot as that front door cutter to right-handed hitters. The breaking ball plays off of that. And then, of course, he can throw the ball to the other side of the plate. But when you're trying to establish that, you completely lose the feel for that pitch that's arm side. And I think that, to me, has been the biggest detriment that I've seen from him, is he just stopped utilizing that arm side part of the plate. And I think that's an easy thing for him to get back. He's just got to trust his stuff there. And again, it's hard to sit here and say, how could a guy that throws 103 not trust his stuff? But we've all seen him pitch, and we've seen, you know, that look in his face that he just didn't quite have that same feel. And I think eventually he's going to get it back. And when he does, it's going to be a big reason, because he's pounding that thing on the inside part of the plate.
Chris, for the second straight season, the Guardians are outperforming the expectations that people had on him. This year is a little bit different in that a lot of people are pointing just to the weak schedule the Guardians have played, and they're pointing to the run differential not being nearly what it should be for a team that at this point is 7 games over .500. How do you explain? You've been on enough good teams. How do you explain when a team gets off to this type of start and now for the second straight year seems like they are outperforming the expectations?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of that is you start to just completely not pay attention to what some of the people are saying, first and foremost, because, you know, I get it. The schedule is what it is, but you can't, you know, change that. That's something that every team has to play, the schedule that was given to them. It just so happens that it's been a benefit to the Guardians early, and that's probably helped them win a few games, if we're being honest with it. But to me, that's how you get on a roll, truthfully. You start to gain confidence. You're beating the teams that you should be beating. And the next thing you know, when you do have a series come up, like this one that they're going to be playing on, you know, this weekend and next week for that matter, you start to have enough confidence that you feel like you can win no matter who's on the mound, no matter what team's in town. And that's when things start to roll. That's what we saw last year. You know, in my opinion, was they started to gain that confidence. And the next thing you know, they took it from there all the way to the American League Championship Series. I also think with that American League Championship Series, they feel like there's a little unfinished business. And they kind of like that underdog mentality. And they kind of like the fact that, you know, maybe people picked Kansas City and Detroit ahead of them this year. It's still early enough in the season that they're going to get this thing figured out. I mean, they don't have it wrong by any means, but they start to garner that confidence. And I think this weekend goes a long way for that. Not that if they get swept or if they lose the series, it's the end all be all. But if you see the Guardians take this series from the Philadelphia Phillies, who in my opinion are a top five team in the league right now, I think you're going to hear maybe a little bit more positive news about our Guardians.
Chris Jimenez, Guardians TV analyst, former Cleveland Indian on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I have been a believer in Gabe Arias. He's just one of those dudes that if, when you watch him hit, it does look different when that guy swings the bat.
Sure.
And so the results haven't been there till this year. Now, a lot of the results look great, except he does have only 8 walks this season. If I had to get on like a 1 to 10 scale, how certain are you that this Gabe Arias is here to stay?
I'm going to say a 6 because I really, really, really want to see this guy stay. He is the most talented player on the field 9 times out of 10. We just played the Yankees. Aaron Judge was more talented than Gabby Arias. Other than that, there's not many players in Major League Baseball that have the kind of raw talent that Gabby has. And I think, you know, you look at the way his career path has gone, it's been obviously extremely up and down. He's been, you know, talked about as not being a hard worker. He was actually sent down last year when we were in Toronto. And I think a lot of those, you know, mistakes that he's made in the past, he's starting to learn from. And at least I certainly hope so. But I talked to Stephen Vogt this year in spring training, and he said the only thing that Gabby Arias hasn't been told in his life is that he's the guy, that you're going to go out there every single day and be the guy. And they were kind of hoping that that messaging was going to help, you know, take the weight of the world off of his shoulders and just allow him to go out there and utilize that supreme talent that he has. And I think we're starting to see that really shine through. He's gaining a lot of confidence. He's doing some really, really good things, both at second base, at shortstop. I mean, he can play anywhere on the field if you really needed him to. But I think what we're going to see is a kid that, you know, still has maybe a little bit of growing pains in regards to some of his swing decisions. But as he continues to garner that experience, that's only going to get better and better and better. I don't know if we'll ever see him walk, you know, at like a 10 or a 12% clip. There's some swing and miss in his game. But boy, if he connects, it's a tantalizing thought to have. I mean, we're talking about MVP type qualities that this kid has from a skill standpoint. And man, how could you not want that to get an opportunity to play every day?
What's been your favorite part through 40 games? Maybe a surprise, maybe a player, maybe a group, maybe anything in between.
I mean, that's a great question, to be honest. And I think one of my favorite things is this team has not yet been whole at any point, and they're still, you know, holding on strong. They're doing as well as they have. To me, that means there's a lot left in the tank. You know, we're going to get Shane Bieber back at some point. We're going to get Trevor Stephan back at some point. Heck, we've only played like 12 games with Lane Thomas, who was the major acquisition for this team last year and a huge point, you know, to this offense clicking on all cylinders this year. So I love the fact that we've continued to beat the teams that we're supposed to beat, even without being at full strength. Because to me, yes, it's still early enough in the year that if you were to, you know, find yourself 4 or 5 games back, you could still make that up in no time. But you're starting to see this team maybe get a little bit healthier and get a little bit more confidence, and then they start to get on that roll.
So with that, Chris, I really loved, it's funny, the stats don't match up with Angel Martinez last year, kind of similar to Gabby Arias, where I watched the kid hit and I'm like, that's just such a sweet stroke. How close is he to being an everyday major leaguer, or has that already happened?
I think we're seeing it happen right before our eyes, guys, to be completely honest with you. You know, this is a kid that obviously didn't make the team out of spring training. And, you know, I think there were some, you know, like procedural standpoints that maybe played into that with some guys being out of options and stuff. And that's kind of how it works at times. But with that being said, he's gotten his opportunity, and boy, is he not taking every bit of advantage of it. He's been a premier hitter. He's continued to give you a quality at-bat, and he's played a pretty darn good center field, to be completely honest, and that's not a natural position for him. He's still kind of learning this on the fly, and I mean, I've seen him get great reads out there, be fearless, you know, not be afraid to sell out, make mistakes if he needs to, in the right way, I mean, but I think we're starting to see this player really come into his own. And again, to me, it's all about confidence. When you get a young player that finds himself starting to gain some of that confidence, the sky's the limit. And I think we're seeing that kind of happen too, again, right before our eyes with Angel Martinez.
Chris, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time. JP appreciates the Shador love.
Always.
Any shalov. We'll get some shalov from JP there. Really good stuff, buddy, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You guys too.
Chris Jimenez there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'm not saying this because he was just on there. Quickly becoming one of my favorite baseball analysts in town.
No question.
Because, one, he comes on the show. But two, no, Chris also gives, like, he's not afraid to say, like, hey, I'm not all the way there yet. Like, with the Gabby Arias, I think that's a great answer. Like, I think 6 out of 10 is exactly where I am with Gabby Arias. I am so close to just being like, this dude's it. But that, you just can't, because there are still those swing and miss moments where you're like, okay, that was just a plain bat at bat.
He's just a really good, the analysis is obviously top notch, but his presentation of it all, and the fact that he reads fan graphs, Nick, can't hate that.
I mean, what more could we want?
Can't hate that.
We are going to have the Kevin Stefanski press conference, but the shalov we saw out there didn't just extend to Browns media at Browns minicamp. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.